The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, Happy New Year, everyone. I haven't seen already and said Happy New Year to 5 times already, but Happy New Year, everybody. Can't say it too often. May you have a peaceful year. Today I'm going to talk about the four divine abodes, the four limitless, boundless states that help us to realize true wisdom by... Well, they're a powerful antidote to selfishness, and selfishness obstructs us. It obstructs wisdom. And when we practice the four divine abodes, the four Brahma-viharas, it helps us to relinquish that suffering, to sort of dissolve it, because selfishness causes suffering to ourselves and other beings. So, the four divine abodes, the four limitless states, loving-kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. They all work together. You need all of them. Loving-kindness, metta, which many of us have heard of, and is the practice of offering impartial, boundless loving-kindness to all beings. It's not a kind of a personal thing, in a sense. It's for everybody. Boundless, to all beings, no judgment, no cutting up, just all beings. Loving kindness, there's love and there's kindness. There's a love for beings that we cultivate and the kindness that we show to beings. They work, they're both of them. You can feel love for beings and that comes out, but to practice kindness as well, working together. In our thoughts, our words, and our actions, to practice loving-kindness. There's a practice that the Buddha taught that some people do practice. It's not strictly part of our tradition, but it's nothing wrong with it at all. It's an excellent practice. Offering us loving-kindness to all beings, no limits, as I said, no judgment, no prejudice, no like and dislike getting in the way. And the way people do it is to start offering loving-kindness to ourselves. It can be the hardest part because many of us find it hard to overcome self-judgment. We may have self-hatred, feelings of unworthiness, unlovableness, I'm not worthy, I'm not worth loving, but I've got to love myself. Because otherwise it's very hard to love other beings. If we hate ourselves, it's hard to be loving in that way to other beings. So to start with ourself, to practice loving kindness towards ourself. To just offer it and not think about it too much. Just offer that kindness and see how it manifests in our life. And then we offer it to people we love easier than some other people. The people we love, offer loving kindness to them. Just offer it, not doing something special, but just offering it, thinking of them with kindly, loving thoughts. And then people we don't know so well, or people we may not like, even people we don't like at all, to offer loving kindness to them. Not always so easy, but it, because they were not making a judgment, I'd want this person's worthy and that person's not. Just offering it to everybody. Everybody needs loving kindness. Then to all beings, in all the many directions, and those above and those below, beings in the hells, beings in the heavens, beings we know and beings we don't know, animals, people, all kinds of beings, radiating outwards everywhere. And it's also, loving kindness is also the simple practice of kindness to beings, not just thinking these kindly thoughts, but also practicing kindness, speaking kindly to people. Buddhism is kindness, as they say, in our relations with other people, our family, our co-workers, the grocery clerk, someone we don't like, someone who cuts us off in the freeway, you know. All these people and not separate from ourselves, and to be able to think kindly of them and act kindly towards them is a huge practice, actually, a wonderful antidote to that divisiveness, selfishness, dislike of somebody else who doesn't think the way I do, or, you know, that is to know that we are actually part of all beings and they are all part of us. Life is so hard, you know, how could we not be kind, as somebody said. It's hard for everybody, and to practice kindness helps us, helps other beings. The next Brahma Vihara, the next divine abode, is compassion, which isn't quite the same thing as loving kindness, because it's feeling with the suffering of beings. That's what compassion means, feeling with those whom we know who are suffering, people we don't know who are suffering. People are suffering from war, disease, famine, displacement, all these awful things that happen to people that you hear about on the news, all the things in people's lives, sickness, a child dying, you know, all these dreadful things that happen to people, horrible sufferings, and the little sufferings of daily life, just the dis-ease that everybody feels now and then, just this, ease, you know, that that feeling. To feel with the suffering of beings, whether it seems like something really intense or just that little that we sometimes feel ourselves. Seeing the suffering of the world, we don't want to drown in it. That isn't helpful, because you can get overwhelmed. If you look at the news too much, you can just think, oh God, this is just awful, you know, how can we do anything? But actually, we can't. That doesn't help, to just drown in the suffering. We have to have some kind of a balance. Otherwise, we can just kind of despair and thinking everything's awful, nothing's ever going to get better, just getting worse. The practice of a little equanimity, which is our last Brahma Vihara, we'll get to that. And to have compassion for ourselves as well. And that's having the balance, the not drowning, is having compassion for ourselves. We can only do so much. We can do our best. The Brahma Viharas, the boundless states, are boundless and limitless, and they are a great source of strength. And yet, we are not all-powerful. We cannot take away the suffering of the world. I think any of us would like to take away all the suffering of the world and have everybody be happy and nice to each other. It isn't happening anytime soon, because it's always been kind of like this, you know, difficulties going on. Having compassion for ourselves also means treating ourselves with kindness, with acceptance, with kindness for our shortcomings, patience with ourselves, not expecting ourselves to be suddenly perfect because we want to be. You know, I really want to do well, I'm going to keep to the precepts, I want to do all this, and suddenly, bang, we've made a horrible mistake. To actually treat that with kindness and not with harsh judgment. Just say, okay, let's get up, try again, I'm sorry, and keep on going. That's compassion. And we can have compassion for ourselves. We can have compassion for other beings. Because if I make mistakes, other people make mistakes, well, I make that mistake too. You know, it's not like, well, I'm perfect and everybody else is not too good. Treating ourselves with kindness and compassion, treating other people with kindness and compassion, it all works together. All the divine abodes work together. Sympathetic joy. Sympathetic joy. You might wonder, why is this one of the divine abodes that I've practiced sympathetic joy? When somebody else is happy, can I be happy too? Sometimes there's a little bit of envy there. How come they got that and I didn't get it? How come their life is wonderful, perfect and lovely, and mine is not? You know, you can think somebody else's life is wonderful, but they have suffering too. Everybody has suffering. Sometimes the situations that seem great are not. People who are wealthy tend to be more miserable than people who are not. So why envy anybody, actually? How often can we actually wholeheartedly, fully rejoice with another person without even a shred of envy or grudge or, you know, thinking ill? To just wholeheartedly rejoice with another's good fortune. It's a wonderful way also. You're feeling with, again, you're feeling with somebody's joy, not just feeling with their suffering, but feeling with their for good fortune too. Practicing selflessness, that we're all actually part of one body, knowing that we're not separate beings, that we actually do feel with others. We can't help it, actually. We can't really cut ourselves off. When there's some tragedy in the world, we feel it. Something happens, an earthquake in the Far East. We feel that. It's not like, oh, what's over there, just those people over there. We feel that. And one of the advantages of the internet and the news is that we can see, oh, these are people with horrible devastation. These are people whose children are starving. These are people who are displaced. All these awful things that we see happening, we can feel with the suffering and also feel with the joy of people. It doesn't seem like there's so much of that, but it does exist. We're more likely to see it in the life of somebody we know. Somebody has a nice relationship and decides to get married and they're happy. Joy. They're having a baby. Joy. If they want a baby. Another story. But we can't actually cut ourselves off from other beings. Even if we want to, we can't. And it's as well to not want to, but to know we're all part of that one being. Equanimity, the last of our four divine abodes, and often overlooked. It doesn't sound like much. Equanimity sounds a bit cold and is not indifference. It's not like, me, you know, everything's fine. They're suffering, they're happy. Well, who cares? I'm suffering, I'm happy. Well, it'll pass. It's more balance. Balance of mind, the equalness of mind, tranquility of mind. Sitting still, seeing beyond the immediate conditions, sitting still in the midst of all the conditions, whether it's our own mind that's going crazy, or the world that's going crazy, or staying crazy, or our relationship with other people, or something that's happening to our family, and all these things that can happen in our lives. To do our best to sit still in the midst of that. Meditation is the practice of equanimity, to sit still, whether in formal meditation or just sitting still in a moment and all hell seems to be breaking loose. Oh my goodness, this is what's going on. Just come back to sit still for a moment. It's immeasurably helpful. Whatever's going on in our mind, whatever's going on in our world or on our own life, that practice of sitting still, of making that our lodestone, just come back, sit still in the midst of it, helps us to see what's beyond that, what's beyond this immediate situation. There's something much bigger than me and my perceptions or my stuff. Acceptance and patience with the things we may not like. Equanimity, acceptance, the balance. Patience with all the things that come our way. Say patience is the great asceticism. And it's not easy to practice because it takes a long time by its very nature. With equanimity, we can feel things more keenly. It's not unfeelingness, but we're not thrown off balance by things quite so much. We can see beyond. We can see the bigger picture, as it were. And this is to practice faith. There's something bigger than us within which it all takes place. It's not just this little me. The greater realm, the greater thing, Buddha nature, we're all part of that, and we can't help it. No matter what's happening, it all takes place within that. And with equanimity and sitting still, we can come back to that, no matter what's happening. All our joys and sorrows, all the suffering of the world, all the triumphs and failures of life. To practice equanimity is to be bright-minded. This is why I'm going on about it a bit. We could use a little bright-mindedness, you know. Looking up and not just looking down, no matter what's going on in the world or in our lives. One of our monks recently sent out this list that he'd found on the internet of of 99 good things that happened this year in our world. I think it was one last year too. 99 good things that you don't always see on the news. The news shows us the bad stuff. This is the good news. all kinds of positive things going on. People working on counteracting climate change, better healthcare, reducing poverty. In many parts of the world, there's great progress in some of these things. Yes, there's other things that are not so good, but these are some of the positive things. And it's good to remember that there's a lot of people working for good in all kinds of ways, and to not lose heart, because beings, we are all part of Buddha nature, and we all have that aspiration to good, no matter who we are or what we do or what it looks like, what somebody else does. We all have that basic wish to be good, to do good, to practice harmony, even when somebody seems to be bent on doing harm. It's because they're suffering. It's not because that's their fundamental nature. So all these four divine abodes, they work together. You can't have one without the others. When we feel with other beings, when we feel their sorrows, and we feel their joys, and we rejoice with them, or we are sad with them, and try to help, when we can offer loving kindness and real help too to other beings, no matter what we may think of them, not thinking whether they deserve our loving kindness or our help, but just offering because they're human beings and they need love and care, all beings do. When we can practice loving kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy with equanimity, with that balance, seeing things in perspective and not getting completely thrown off by suffering and so forth. When you can do this with equanimity, we're practicing wisdom. And this is practicing the divine abodes, limitless divine abodes. Now, just about every year, I give a Dharma talk on the 1st of January. New Year's Day, generally I do the Dharma talk. And each year, I find myself saying, well, it looks pretty dark in our world, it looks pretty rough, and let's just keep a bright heart and practice faith and hope and all that. Every year I do this. Each year it seems like things are getting worse, but actually I think that's just our perception. It's always been like this. It's always seemed like the world's in a bad state and we need encouragement. And we do need encouragement, and the world is in a bad state. And there are good things going on too. And what can we do to help? How can we live our lives in a good way? These four divine abodes that the Buddha taught, the limitless, boundless states, they're his advice to us. The world was just as bad in his time, if not worse. They were always having wars. The little kingdoms would fight each other. He saw his whole clan being devastated by a battle, a war. He tried to prevent it. Twice he succeeded. The third time he just said, they're determined to do this, and he let them do it. And some of his clansmen got slaughtered. This is just the way it was in those days. It's not that different nowadays. It's just bigger, bigger wars sometimes. But, there's always violence and hatred, corruption and greed, fear. Greed, hate, and delusion, the three poisons. They're what everybody has to deal with. We all have that. We all have to work on it within ourselves. It's not like suddenly they've appeared out of nowhere. They've always been this way. And we can work on them in our own lives, our own greed and hatred and delusion. And we can help the world in our own way and not think it's useless. It's not useless. Practicing these four limitless abodes, practicing loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy and equanimity. This is to live as the Buddha would live. And how he would have us live. This would be his prescription for us. This is his prescription for us. To live with true wisdom. Not from selfishness, which is the antithesis of wisdom and which leads to suffering. Selfishness and separation, feeling that there's me and my stuff and I'm important and everything else out there. Even when it's a big, fatter me, like me and the people I love, or me and my town or me in my country or whatever, still a me. But to see that we're all actually part of one being, no matter who we are, where we live, what we think. Even the people who don't think like me. Yep, even them. We're all part of this great body of the Buddha. We're all like cells in this body, all working together as best we can, living together and trying to do our best. And yes, there are wars and violence and hatred and greed and selfishness and separation and all that. And we have these things within ourselves. We all have our own selfishness. That's the basis of it. Our own selfishness. Me and what I want or what I don't want. And we all have that. But we can do our best to counteract this selfishness with the practice of the four divine abodes that are wonderful, powerful practice, to practice loving kindness, sympathetic joy, compassion, equanimity, that all the practice of oneness with all life. And as we practice them, they help us to know that we're living from that. And when we live from that, we can find it for ourselves. Wisdom doesn't generally just fall from the sky, bang. You know, we have to practice it. And by practicing it, we come to know it for ourselves. The more we can practice kindness and compassion, the more we can relinquish our clinging to our opinions, our views, and distancing ourselves from people who don't think like me, the more we can listen to other people who think differently. It can be quite illuminating. There are sensible people who don't think the way I do. And not to think of them as other. The more we can sit still in the midst of all the conditions of our mind or our lives, the more we do all these things, the more we're practicing wisdom. And we practice wisdom, practicing relinquishing selfishness, which is the practice of wisdom. The more we can do this, the more we help ourselves, we help each other, and we help our world. Maitreya, the Buddha that is to come, he shows us how to practice the four divine abodes. If ever you saw someone practicing them, four divine abodes, as him, his name means loving kindness, Maitri, loving kindness. He embodies it. You can see that. He embodies compassion, not just, you know, radiating loving kindness, but also feeling, seeing. He knows life is hard. He sees how hard it is to inhabit the six realms of existence, it says in, I think, the offertory. He embodies sympathetic joy, rejoicing with beings. He practices joy because there is joy. It's not just life is hell and then you die. There is joy in life. And the more we train, the more we feel joy, actually. It can be quiet. Joy is not being happy all the time. But there's a joy in doing the practice, in living our life well as best we can, in doing the best we can to keep to the precepts, to practice compassion, sympathetic joy, and so forth. And the equanimity that comes from practicing the other divine abodes, the stillness, the faith that there is something within which we dwell, and we cannot get away from that. We're right within it, within Buddha nature, we can't get away from it. The Buddha that is to come, the promise of our own Buddhahood, our own awakening to wisdom. It's not just thinking this is fine in the future. It is our practice here and now, right now, in this very moment, this very thought, this very breath. We can practice these four divine abodes. And that's how Maitreya is teaching for us today.